This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
Southern trees bear a strange fruit.
In this haunting song, Billie Holiday sings about strange fruit, a reference to the dark days of lynching in the Jim Crow South. In his new graphic anthology, author and illustrator Joel Christian Gill evokes that image to tell stories of Black Americans in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. It includes 9 little-known stories, from the first Black U.S. Marshal to an island enclave of free Blacks off the coast of Maine. Gill grew up in the South, went to university here in Boston, and is now the Associate Dean of Student Affairs at the New Hampshire Institute of Art. His new graphic anthology is called Strange Fruit: Uncelebrated Narratives from Black History. He'll be discussing the book tonight at the Harvard Bookstore. He's with us now. And Joel Christian Gill, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. And I got to say, I was reading this book last night, and the images have stayed with me. And I've never felt that or said that about, I don't like using the word comic because that seems to sort of almost demean what this is. But I've never had a comic book do that for me.
Well, that's a great compliment. Thank you. That's what I was going for. I wanted people to get these stories and sort of live with them for a while. So I'm glad it lives with
you. No, it really does. So these 9 stories, and I want to talk about 1 or 2 of them, they're remarkable. How did you first learn about these stories? What kinds of stories were you looking for?
I first learned about them sort of organically. I met a cartoonist named Box Brown, and I was cyberstalking him, trying to figure out more and more about his work. Mm. And when I Googled his name, it came up Henry Box Brown, who was a slave who mailed himself in a box from Virginia to Philadelphia. And he said he might do a story about it, and I said, well, I'm going to beat you to it and steal your idea. And I did it, and sent it to him later, and he thought it was a great idea. And from there, people would tell me the next story. So there's not a story in Strange Fruit that I looked for myself and found. People actually came and told me about it. I would go to a convention, and people would say, have you heard about Major Taylor, or have you heard about Henry, have you heard about Bucky Liu, or have you heard about Malaga Island, or those kind of things? And I would take those notes on all of those, and then I would go home and research them and find the stories.
Well, you just mentioned Malaga Island, and this is one of the stories I wanted to ask you about. You call the story Shame. It's the story of Malaga Island off the coast of Maine, which is part of the town of Phippsburg. An amazing story about a group of free Blacks living there in the early part of the 19th century. Then they were cruelly evicted. And we actually have a clip to play. This is from a 2009 documentary about the story produced by the Salt Institute for Documentary Studies and WMPG, a public radio station in Portland, Maine. So let's listen to this.
Few people have talked publicly about Malaga over the last 100 years. Many in Phippsburg would rather forget the incident. The eviction lingers darkly in the town's history. And descendants of the evicted islanders have largely remained silent, too. The local stigma of mixed blood and feeble-mindedness is still present, even today. In fact, some say Malaga is a story best left untold.
But you have told it. So tell us more about the shame and the story of Malaga Island.
So there was a group of Black and white people, and they intermarried, and their children lived on this island at around the turn of the century. And they were all the descendants of a slave named Ben Darling, who saved his master and was given a plot of land, an island that was close to Malaga.
Saved his master from a shipwreck. Right.
And so they all moved to this island, and they lived there for about 50 years. And at the time, in about turn of the century, there was about 50 or 60 people living there. And because of a land grab or some dubious circumstances, the state of Maine, together with some privateers, got together and evicted the entire people off the island. They evicted them. They burned the buildings. They committed some of the children to the home for the feeble-minded. They castrated some of the people. And to add insult to injury, they dug up the graves and reinterred them at the home for the feeble-minded as well.
Mm. It's a complicated story, and you tell it really well, because it's not, I mean, of course, racism is at the heart of it, but people came out and their perceptions about what they saw was complicated, right?
I mean, right. So, you know, some people would see we need to help these people.
Right.
And some people would say we need to get them off so we can use the land. And so trying to convey that idea, those conflicting ideas about what people see And what actually is there is what something you can't do in you can't do in any other medium. You can almost not do it any other place.
Yeah. Well, these pictures, you know, I'd really like to ask you about this. And listeners, we do have a web build out at RadioBoston.org, because I'd be hard pressed to describe the way Joel Christian Gill draws, but you draw beautifully and evocatively. I mean, I'm just going to talk about one image here. It's a picture of a man. A white man pointing to a black man, and the bubble, it isn't that he's saying words, it's a picture of a sort of caricature of a black man's face.
Yeah, it's
in other words, he's saying, "You're a black man."
Right. Well, actually, he's saying the N-word, and I wanted that to be the N-word.
The N-word.
So
I see,
to represent that, which is another thing that comics can do that other things can. And I always think about, if anybody's ever seen Django, the N-word becomes wallpaper in that movie, mm-hmm. because it said so much. But what I wanted to do with that image is to do that caricature, that early 20th century sort of blackface character, so that people, when they looked at that, they would see the history that was embedded in it and the discrimination and the racism that's embedded in that, and also see that it's actually separate from what they're actually calling him. So when you look at that man, he doesn't look like that.
Right.
He's not anything close to that. But there's a disconnect between him and the word. And so, you know, I spent a lot of time doing that in this story and in other stories as well, because I think that's a really good way to sort of give you that information without beating somebody over the head with it.
Indeed. I'm really curious about how you work, because, you know, I think of you as a writer and an artist, you know, I relate more immediately to the writing, and I can imagine sort of crafting the words and then, like, yes, you know, this is the way I wanted to express this. But do you go through the same sort of struggle with these pictures? I mean, I'd love to hear something about the process of getting these images just right to convey what you're trying to convey.
So, you know, there's that thing that people say in writing that you show, don't tell. In comics, you have to show and tell, and have to figure out what to show and what to tell.
Yeah.
You have to be a true auteur. Like, I have to figure out, you know, when you think of the Malaga Island inhabitants, you don't think about what they're wearing, but I think about what they're wearing. I think about what the island looks like, what time of day it is. I think about all those different things. And so trying to convey them and use that to convey the story. Typically, I will draw, what I do is, I'll read as much information as I possibly can about any given story. So I'll read the story, I'll sort of live with it until I can just tell anybody. So if somebody just said, "Come and tell me about the Malaga Island story," so I can tell that story.
Yeah.
Once I get it embedded in my head, then I draw the story. The words are actually secondary. I actually go in and do the words last, because I've already told the story, because comics has this really weird thing that, or it's a really great thing, that it actually can tell the story and the words can do something different. And in some places it does that. And so that's what I try to do, is try to make sure that when you look at the pictures, you can tell the story. And when you look at the words, you can tell the story. And when you look at them together, you get two things that are working together to complete the entire circle of the story.
All right. So one more note about this amazing story about Malaga Island. In September of 2010, Maine Governor John Baldacci visited Malaga Island, apologized for his predecessor's action, and here's some of what he said.
To the descendants of Benjamin Darling, let me just say that I'm sorry. I'm sorry for what was done. It wasn't right, and we're raised better than that.
That's former Maine Governor John Baldacci speaking back in 2010. And your story concludes, "Not much has changed since 1911. Governor John Baldacci issued a formal apology in 2010 to the descendants of the island's inhabitants. Now the only thing left is a scarred memory, an empty island, and incredible views." And you've created a beautiful picture of those views.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I tried to do an old photograph and a new photograph and, like, split them in half so that they looked like they were, one was digital and one was an old one.
It's powerful stuff. I want to make sure I have time to talk about at least one more story. Another story about a kind of multiracial utopia in New England that met a tragic end. It's the story of Noyes Academy in Canaan, New Hampshire. This is in the early 1800s, so... And this was the nation's first integrated school.
Yeah, so there was starting to be a large community of freed slaves, and so people, specifically abolitionists, were trying to figure out what we're going to do with all of these freed slaves, mm-hmm. because most schools didn't allow you to educate them along with other kids. And so they created this utopian school in Canaan, New Hampshire, where they were going to educate black children and white children all together. And it was 1835, and it's pretty fantastic that this kind of happened. And Alexander Crummell, who was one of the foremost abolitionist at the time, became a minister, was one of the people who went to the school. And so he goes there, but the school doesn't last because unbeknownst to the people in the school and the children of the school, the surrounding towns got together and voted them down and said, we're going to get rid of these schools. And so they came in and tied the school to oxen and pulled the school out. They literally pulled the school out of town and sunk it into a swamp. And so instead of drawing, so I do a little bit of more of that symbolism in this one. Instead of drawing this angry crowd of people, I draw these crows that are represented.
I was just going to ask you about that really powerful image. I mean, there's one image that stuck with me. So it's of two kids playing baseball, a black kid and a white kid. And behind them is sort of the white fence that is the edge of the baseball field. And behind the white fence, this crow. Making his way over the fence, sort of like invading from the outside.
Yeah, and you know, that extended metaphor in comics is something that I really, really enjoy doing, and it's something that Art Spiegelman, I stole that idea from Art Spiegelman, with Mouse, with the mice are the Jews and the cats are the Nazis. And so that sort of, you know, that embedded kind of, we're going to do terrible things to you, what cats do to mice, is in there. And so I wanted to do that with the crows, because if you think about it, a flock of crows is called a murder. I have this group of people with this murderous intent showing up, but I don't say that, and none of those things are said. And they don't even say that they're actually, that Jim Crow is there. It's more of a, this thing is happening, so that's more of an implied thing. So I wanted that, again, I wanted that visual to be, you know, this murder of crows attacking these people for a very benign thing. When you look at it, it's a very benign thing.
What a tragic story. And how does this story conclude? So this story essentially dragged into a swamp by a group of oxen. The school never came back to light.
Never came back to light. Alexander Crummell went on to get his education at other places. And the school never showed up again. And it's another one of those stories that I did I spoke at a school for another story in the book about Richard Potter, a magician from New Hampshire, and they asked me when I was talking about the magician, did I know about this story? So I went and looked it up, and I found it, you know, pretty amazing.
Yeah. I want to ask you sort of about the great purpose of this book. You know, in the foreword, Henry Louis Gates talks about your book in the context of people who are using jazz and hip-hop music to inspire learning about history. And he says you're joining the effort by leveraging your dazzling artistic talents to enliven those who typically receive only encyclopedic treatment. So do you see this as part of an effort to sort of resurrect this history, to keep it alive for a younger generation who might not otherwise engage with it?
I think that's sort of, I guess if I'm being completely honest, I just drew them because they were really cool stories. And so everybody else sort of puts all this other information in there. And I really enjoy the stories. I really enjoy history. And I enjoy these specific histories because I think they're the true sort of rugged individualism of America, like these people who were able to do something in the face of absolutely nothing. So I can see it moving in this direction where people, it's a more accessible medium. I mean, you talk about reading it. You can read this book in a couple hours. It's not a daunting thing and get a lot of information. And that's purposeful. I want you to get that information and feel it in a way that you wouldn't necessarily get if you watched a television show or if you read a book about it. So there's just things that comics can do and people that it can reach that it doesn't you don't necessarily think that they could. So it's pushing the boundaries, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you that you can read it in a couple of hours. But boy, these images sort of demand or require or encourage you to sort of sit with them for a while. I spent a lot more than a couple of hours yesterday with it and really enjoyed it. So we only have about 30 seconds left. I understand you're working on Volume 2. Can you share something about Volume 2?
I'm working on Volume 2, and it'll have more stories. It'll have the story of Bessie Stringfield. It'll have the story of Cathay Williams, who was the first known black Buffalo soldier. Between Volume 1 and Volume 2, I'll be doing Tales of the Talented Tenth, which is a story about Bass Reeves by himself. So that's a whole book about Bass Reeves.
Well, Joel Christian Gill is Associate Dean of Student Affairs at New Hampshire Institute of Art. He's the author and illustrator of the graphic anthology Strange Fruit, Uncelebrated Narratives from Black History. He'll be discussing the book tonight at the Harvard Bookstore. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate
really
it.
Really great meeting you and talking to you. And that's it for today. I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.